What's up, everybody? I'm Ross Stripling, Blue Jays pitcher and host of this podcast. I just wanted to say welcome to the last episode of Season 1 of the GOATS podcast. We named this season On the Bump because we have been talking about some of the greatest pitchers that have ever played the game of baseball. I love this game, and I love its amazing history. That's why this podcast has been so much fun for me. I got to sit down with fellow pitchers like Clayton Kershaw, Trevor Bauer, Jameson Taillon, and talk about Hall of Famers like Koufax and Maddux. I truly enjoyed recording these episodes, so I really hope you guys have enjoyed listening to them. I know we left some really good conversations out there about some amazing pitchers we just didn't have the chance to cover. Maybe we'll save those for another day. But until then, thank you so much for tuning in to Season 1 of GOATS. Check out my other podcast, it's called The Big Swing, and all the other amazing shows on the Jam Street Media. With that, here is our last episode of Season 1 of the On the Bump podcast. What's going on, baseball fans? Welcome to another episode of the On the Bump podcast with me, Blue Jays pitcher Ross Stripling, where we take a deep dive into an all-time great pitcher of the past with another current big leaguer. We got a fun one today. We got an all Blue Jays podcast. We got myself with my teammate Trent Thornton. We're talking about one of the greatest pitchers of all time, but certainly one of the greatest Blue Jays pitchers of all time. That's right-handed pitcher Roy Halladay. So Trent is just the best teammate you could ever ask for. This dude shows up with a smile on his face every day. He's the perfect guy you want in the locker room. He also gets after it on the mound. You can trust him in any role. He starts, he relieves. He's really good at what he does. Something that I've done plenty in my career, that's for sure. So he said that Roy Halladay was his favorite pitcher growing up. So this was a no-brainer. We had the Blue Jays connection. Obviously, Roy Halladay deserves to be talked about on this podcast as one of the greatest pitchers we've ever seen. A guy that manipulated the baseball in the same realm as a Greg Maddux, deserves to be mentioned like a Greg Maddux as far as how he kept hitters off balance, created movement on the baseball. So this was a no-brainer. So before we get Trent in, let's do a little bit of background on Roy Halladay. Grew up in Colorado. I guess he had a basement big enough that he could actually have a 60-foot, 6-inch mound to plate in his basement. That's pretty cool. That's like a little kid's dream. He was 6'6". He was an all-state basketball player, but obviously dominated baseball. I love the stats from like guys like this that just murdered it in high school baseball. He was 3 years on varsity. He went 26-2 with a .55 ERA. I mean, just mowing people down. Drafted 17th overall in 1995 to the Blue Jays. Rocketed up through the minor leagues. Makes his debut in 1998. Actually, in his second start, he was one out away from a no-hitter, which is pretty cool. All right, so in 2000, it's his third year in the big leagues. He has a 10-6 ERA. That is the highest single-season ERA of a Hall of Fame pitcher ever. It actually leads to a demotion to AAA. So this is a Hall of Famer. He's in the big leagues. In his third season, he gets demoted to AAA. Well, it actually gets even worse. The next season, 2001, they start him all the way in high A. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Like, if you're a position player and now you're going to try and be a pitcher, I've seen them move you down to like single A, right? Because you're starting a whole new position. You're basically starting your career over. This guy was in the big leagues, a first rounder, like supposed to be a cornerstone of your rotation. We're going to really get into that with Trent about what that must have done to him mentally, how that affected him. He could have fallen apart there, but instead he goes down, reinvents himself, gets much better. So he ends up in double A that same season, starts working with a pitching coach named Mel Queen, who I guess him and Roy Halladay have a really good working relationship really through the rest of Roy's career. This is the first time they told him, hey, let's lower your arm angle, let's increase movement, and let's throw your pitches down the middle and let the movement do the work, right? This is kind of the genesis of drawing the X, a strategy that really paid off. Drawing the X, Roy Halladay made it sexy, made it a thing. We're going to get into it on this podcast for sure. He works his way back up to the big leagues by that season's end, and that's when we get the Doc Halladay that we all know and remember. All right, so he gets back to the big leagues in 2001 after starting that season in high A. Now we're moving forward, 2002 to 2011. Roy Halladay was as good as any starting pitcher we had in baseball over that stretch. He led the league in innings, complete games, and shutouts many times over the course of those years. He threw over 220 innings, 8 out of the 10 years. He won the Cy Young in 2003 and 2010, as well as 2 second-place finishes in there. Crazy stat that I saw, he twice struck out more than 200 batters in a season, that he also walked fewer batters than starts. Okay, so he pitched over 200 innings, struck out 200 people, and he walked less than one per start. That had only been done twice by Cy Young. So he wins the Cy Young in those seasons, and the only other person that ever did it was Cy Young. I don't know, I just thought that was a cool stat. So over the course of this period, right, we're talking 2002 to 2011, he had 63 complete games. That's 30 more than the next closest guy, which was CC Sabathia. Cool thing about Roy Halladay, by all accounts, he had a mid to high 90s fastball. Like, he could have been Nolan Ryan. He could have been Sandy Koufax. Instead, he chose to be a control pitcher. He had the raw stuff to go out there and throw 98 miles an hour, but he chose to pitch like a control pitcher. Yeah, so he could have gone out there and tried to throw 98 miles an hour by you, but instead, he lived in 90, 93, sinking it, changing it up, cutting the ball, throwing a big breaker. He was keeping guys off balance with command and movement and living on the edge, living on the black. He never struck out more than a batter per inning for a season. I think his most impressive season was 2010 season. It was his first with the Phillies. It was an incredible year. He went 21-10, 250 innings, 219 strikeouts, only 30 walks. That's a 7.3 strikeout to walk ratio. That's an insane number. Also that year, he threw a perfect game and a no-hitter in his first ever playoff appearance. Just an unbelievable season. So that was kind of, he was already in his low 30s there. So then we move into the later stage of his career, 2012, 2013. He's struggling with injuries, and all of a sudden he's out of the game at 36 years old. And something I don't really want to get into a whole lot on this podcast is the substance abuse and the tragic death. Obviously, I'm going to touch on it. It's part of his legacy. I guess he began taking sedatives to sleep ahead of starts. I think he got really nervous before starts, and he would take things the night before to get some sleep and to help his nerves. Later in his career, routinely pitched through pain. You know, he had back issues. He had shoulder issues. I think he started taking prescription drugs to deal with the pain, and had a shoulder surgery in 2013. And I guess after that, you know, kind of the wheels fell off for him a little bit. And he was retired then, needed a hobby. I think he was having some substance abuse issues. He needed something, you know, to get his mind off that. And he started taking up flying. And November 2017, he crashes his plane and tragically passes away. It's, you know, a really, really sad story. And ESPN did a really awesome documentary of this part of Roy Halladay's life. It's called Imperfect. Like I said, we're not going to be going into it a whole lot on this podcast. We're more here to celebrate the accomplishments of Roy Halladay on the field and how he was a wizard on the mound and one of the greatest pitchers we've ever seen. So let's finish up with his career stats: 203 wins, a 3.38 ERA, 2,700 innings, 2,200 strikeouts, 8 All-Star games, 2 Cy Young Awards, and a member of the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. He's remembered fondly in the same realm as a Greg Maddux, a pitcher's pitcher, a guy that was a wizard with movement and command. Guys, I really can't reiterate enough how he manipulated the baseball, how he was able to create so much movement, but also live on the edges. He never threw the ball over the heart of the plate. He kept hitters off balance constantly. I mean, going back and watching footage of his perfect game, his no-hitter, his some of his good starts, it's incredible. I mean, the guy was an absolute wizard. I mean, he really was one of the greatest we've ever had. So, and certainly one of the greatest Blue Jays we've ever had, which is why this podcast is going to be so much fun, because it's two Blue Jays talking about one of the greatest Blue Jays, a guy that grew up idolizing Roy Halladay, and that's my teammate, current pitcher Trent Thornton. Let's bring him in. All right, guys, welcome back. We are joined by Trent Thornton, fifth-round pick out of North Carolina. That was a fifth-round pick, only good guy. I think Cavan was a fifth-round pick. We got a lot of fifth-round picks. That was by the Astros, got traded over to the Blue Jays, debuted with the Blue Jays in 2019, bounced around between starting and relieving. Another thing that I've also done. Trent Thornton, what's up, dude?
Hey, Ross, thanks for having me, man. Excited to be here.
Yeah, man, this is fun. We got some Blue Jays pods on deck. We did Robbie, Steve Carlton. We're going to do Andy Pettit with Matts, and now we got Trent Thornton talking about one of the filthiest guys we've ever had, Roy Halladay. Doesn't get talked about enough, but one of the filthiest guys we've ever had. So you wanted to do Roy Halladay. Obviously, we had the Blue Jays connection. We had to do it. It's a perfect podcast to get into. You said he was your favorite pitcher when you were growing up. So like right off the bat, what is the first thing or the first few things that come to mind when you think about why you loved Roy Halladay?
I mean, he was just a workhorse. You look at all the, you know, complete games that he threw in his career. I mean, it's not even close to the next guy. You know, he was a fierce competitor out there. And the biggest thing for me is that you look for starting pitchers to get deep into games. And he did that on a consistent basis and, you know, just went about his business the right way on and off the field. And, you know, it was fun watching him growing up.
So you get traded from the Astros over to the Blue Jays. Unfortunately, Halladay had passed away by then, but I've heard you say, like, if you could have met one guy in the Blue Jays locker room, like the guy walking through the halls, you know, I was very lucky in the time with the Dodgers to meet Sandy Koufax, Oral Hershiser, some, you know, the greats that did it before. You never got that chance with Roy Halladay. Would you think you would have been starstruck, or would you have gone right up to him and been like, Roy, what's up, man? Teach me the ways.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think I'd be a little starstruck, you know, just watching perfection. You know, he was a master of his routine and what he did on the field. And, you know, I definitely would have worked up the courage to talk to him for sure, because you can't pass up that opportunity. But I definitely would have been a little nervous to start.
You've already touched on a little bit. I wrote this down like kind of late in the notes, because when you watch him, all right, so you were touching about the work ethic, like wanting to be a perfectionist. And by all accounts, that's exactly how he was, and probably why he had some of the demons that he had. But when you watch him pitch, he's very kind of mellow, like almost Corey Kluber-ish, where not a lot of emotion on the mound. But you hear all the stories of how he just worked out relentlessly and watched video and scouted hitters relentlessly. Like, when you watch him, those don't really match up. So how did you know that he was like that, just from reading about him, studying him, and those kind of things?
Yeah, I mean, just from what other people talked about him. You know, I was fortunate to talk to a lot of guys that played with him in the Blue Jays organization, and just talked about how hard he worked. You know, he was always covered in sweat, and, you know, he was first guy there, last one to leave. And that's the type of guy that you want to lead that rotation, someone who gives 110% every time out. And, you know, that's who I wanted to model my game after, you know, clearly not starting right now. But, you know, it's just a guy that I feel like a lot of people idolized growing up.
Will you quickly tell the story of how AJ Hinch made you do a book report on Roy Halladay in spring training?
Yeah. So, you know, Hinch got a lot of dirt on me from a lot of other guys that I came up through the system with. And, you know, he'd make me go in front of the team during spring training and just tell stories and stuff. And then one day he was like, you know, who was your favorite player growing up? And like, oh man, I was a big fan of Roy Halladay. He's like, hey, well, you just earned yourself a book report. So I had to quickly do my due diligence and study up on Roy. And, you know, it was pretty cool, you know, being able to talk about my favorite pitcher to a lot of guys. You know, you had Verlander in the room, Keuchel, Cole, Morton, all guys that are super established Cy Young Award winners. And I'm sure those guys looked up to him at some point as well. So it was pretty neat.
You remember like one favorite fact from that book report?
Oh man, that's tough. One thing that I really enjoyed reading up on was, you know, he got to the big leagues, was really successful, and then kind of hit a little dud period where he struggled, and they sent him back down to the minor leagues and kind of reinvented himself. You know, he had like a pitching whisperer coach that just kind of, you know, he refound himself. And, you know, it's just, you look at all these Hall of Fame pitchers or guys that are dominant for a long time that, you know, you don't typically think that they struggle at all because they've always been so good. But, you know, he redefined himself and came back, and that's the Roy Halladay that we know and love.
Yeah, so that's a perfect segue, because that's exactly the next note that I had, is he's a first rounder, a guy that's supposed to be a brick of their rotation, like one of the guys that we're going to count on moving forward. He's in his third year, already in his third year in the big leagues. You're in your third year in the big leagues. And he rocks the worst single season ERA that a Hall of Famer has ever had. It's a 10-6 ERA. And they send him to AAA in that year, finishes the year in AAA. The next year, dude, he starts in high A. They start him totally over in high A. Can you imagine? Like, you're a first rounder. You're supposed to be a guy. You already have 3 years of service time, and now you're in high A. And they're saying, hey, dude, you got to start over. Like, mechanically, mentally, we're going to reboot everything. And sounds like it was the pitching coach in double A, and I touched on in the intro, that lowered his arm angle. We're going to create more movement. We're going to aim down the middle, and we're going to start drawing the X, which we're going to get into more in a little bit. But just to get back, since you're perfect in the time of, like I said, you're in your third year, dude, like, what if they came to you and said, hey, man, we're starting you in high A and we're rebooting everything about you? Like, where are you at mentally going into that next season?
I mean, I can't imagine that, you know, having to reinvent yourself basically to where you're this highly touted guy, you've had some success, and then you kind of just had a rough patch, and, you know, going down high A, you know, that's definitely something that can take a toll on you mentally. If something like that happens, you kind of either got to regroup and figure it out, because at the end of the day, like, it's all about the love of the game. And clearly he loved baseball enough to work through all that stuff and become truly great.
Yeah, props to him for doing it. You know, and it's one of those things that you don't know until you're in that situation how you're going to respond. And he made it back to the big leagues by the end of that year, still threw 100 innings in the big leagues, made 17 starts that year, and came back from that minor league restart and was the dominant pitcher, like you just said, that we all know and remember. You know, he's Doc Halladay. So let's get into the mechanics real quick. I came up to you yesterday in the field and I was like, dude, I'm excited for this one, because Roy Halladay was filthy. Like, he just doesn't get talked about enough. And I was specifically brought up the mechanics. He kind of hunches over and he throws from a low arm slot, and he kind of like leads with his chest and his arm kind of follows. And I think that's why he's able to create so much movement, you know, kind of a pronating from the start almost. When you watch him pitch, it's not what we're teaching anymore in modern baseball by any means. You know, what are you thinking when you're like, okay, that's That's Roy Halladay's motion that's very unique and specific to him.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely funky with his delivery and everything. And like you said, it's not the modern method of pitching. You know, you're taught, you know, the four-seam backspin, you know, tunneling and all that stuff. And, you know, he obviously tunneled with his pitches. But, you know, you got stuff going both ways with all different pitches. And, you know, it's just cool to see, you know, a master pitch. You know, like you could compare him to, you know, Greg Maddux just – working all parts of the zone with all of his pitches. You know, that front hip two-seam to a lefty, man, is one of the sexiest pitches in baseball, and he was one of the best to ever do it. You know, it just makes you jealous of his repertoire and what he was able to do and manipulate the ball the way that he would. You know, it's, man, I just love watching him pitch.
Yeah, I keep reiterating it through the introduction and into now of how he should be mentioned in the same realm as a Greg Maddux. Now, Greg was able to go basically throw twice as many innings as Roy Halladay was. He has probably 150 more wins. Like, I do think Greg is probably an echelon above. But if we're talking about just the ability to manipulate the baseball and work the corners with movement, changing speeds, keeping hitters off balance, they're like 1-2 in my book. You know, and we're going to touch on, actually, let's just do it right now. The whole idea that Roy Halladay had a mid to high 90s fastball, that he could have stood tall, reared back, and thrown 97, probably four seams at the top of the zone with his breaker, but instead he's like, no, I'm gonna paint the corners at 92, 93 with sink, cut, changeups, breakers, and I'm just gonna make people look stupid that way instead of trying to overpower you. Like, if you had 98 in the bag, do you think you would be able to sit back and be like, no, I'm gonna take it off the throttle and actually beat them with command and movement instead of trying to overpower?
I mean, that's a whole nother type of discipline we're talking. If you have that 97, 98 in the tank, like, the way my mind works is like, that's fully convicted pitches with intent. And, you know, if I have it in the tank, why not use it? So that's a hard concept for me to understand, you know, especially because you see so many guys just wanting to throw hard. But throwing hard and pitching is completely different. And Roy Halladay was a pitcher.
Yeah.
You know, and he used that to his advantage. And, you know, I'm sure that if he needed to run it up there, he could. But he was so, you know, precise with what he was trying to do and execute, and he was one of the best at doing it.
I wrote down this question, and now I think it's really stupid that I wrote it down. If you had his arsenal, how would you attack hitters? It's like exactly the way that he did, I guess.
Absolutely, man. I would just, you know, do exactly what he did, you know, not change a single thing, you know, maybe chase a couple more strikeouts here and there, but, you know, he was able to get so deep into games by getting quick outs.
Yep.
And I think that's one thing that, you know, kind of gets overlooked is that, you know, people chase the strikeout so often now. And yeah, strikeouts are sexy, but getting deep into games, man, that's what you want your workhorse to do. That's something I wish I could do, is get quicker outs, not throw as many pitches, you know? So,
yep. How about, had you heard drawing the X before Roy Halladay?
Essentially, yes, but not to the point where it's like literally, you know, top, bottom, left, right, you know? And
I want to, I guess, take a second to explain what drawing the X really is, because I've already said it like 9 times on this podcast. So in case you don't know, so just think about, if I'm throwing a ball down the middle, if I throw a sinker down the middle with Roy Halladay's type movement, it should start on the middle of the plate and move away from a lefty to like the outside corner. So then if I throw a cutter, also start it down the middle, cutter or slider, then it will break into a lefty and, you know, theoretically be on the corner to his glove side. So now that's drawing an X, right? I'm throwing something down the middle, and it's going to break one of two ways. It's never going to be straight. It's going away or into the hitter. And there's a lot of people that try and just do that down the middle. And if you can do that, you're probably going to be successful. Well, Roy Halladay learned how to do that in basically every quadrant, but specifically inside and outside. So let's specifically say a left-handed pitcher. I can throw a sinker that starts at the lefty batter, and it's going to run into the strike zone. So I'm going ball to strike there. Then after that, I can start like a cutter or a slider on the plate, and then it runs into the batter. And so that's going strike to ball. And he can do that with sinkers, cutters, sliders, curveballs, changeups to both sides of the plate, to lefties and righties. So that's when I say like he's a wizard. That's what he was doing, because not only was he changing speeds and manipulating the baseball, he was doing it to every quadrant, to any hitter, in any count, and he was living on the corners. Like, if you go watch, there's 12-minute montages of some of his best outings on YouTube. Dude, he never threw anything over the heart of the plate. It is the craziest thing. So what's your best drawing the X? Like, if you were to do, let's say you're facing a lefty, You're like, I'm going to draw the X on this guy. Like, what's that pitch sequence?
See, I don't really throw a sinker, so that's tough for me. But, you know, I can start cutter, middle, go in, throw changeup off that. You know, I'm more of a four-seam fastball guy, so, like, my tunneling's more up and down. But, you know, I kind of tinkered with a one-seamer in 19 when I was starting. You know, you could obviously go from there. But my attack plan's a little different than his, clearly just because I throw four-seam fastballs and not two-seams.
That's kind of the game now. I'm the same. You know, the game, for one, I think hitters now command the strike zone so well. I think they know exactly where the inside and the outside part of the plate is, you know, mostly 1 through 9 in the lineup. And now the way you get a hitter out is you get them out front to back, which are the four seams up in the zone and the breaker that is kind of off that tunnel and short, right? And that's how you're messing with his depth, kind of front to back in the plate versus side to side, which Roy Halladay did. My favorite one, and I don't do it a lot, but I'm starting to try and do a little bit more, is like a backdoor cutter to a lefty and then the changeup off that. You know, so you throw something kind of in the other batter's box. Hungin does it phenomenally well.
Ball to strike.
Yeah. And then you throw the changeup, which looks like it's just a meatball, and then it fades off the plate. And they're like, God, what just happened? I love that so much. All right. So you've touched on it a little bit. It's about getting deep into games. He was a workhorse. He's as good as anybody that's ever done it as far as getting deep into games, logging innings. I mean, like I said, he threw over 220 innings, 8 out of 10 years of the best stretch of his career. Do you just think that strikeouts weren't like a priority for him? He wasn't going out there saying, hey, I'm going to strike out 10 today. It's, hey, I'm going to get through the lineup 4 times.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think in his mindset is that, like, he wanted to go 9 innings every time. And his best shot at doing that was throwing the least amount of pitches as possible, trying to get quick outs and induce, you know, weak ground balls and stuff like that. You know, as soon as you start to try to chase the strikeout, pitch count rises and you're not going to get deeper in games.
I think that, exactly right. And I think that he, you know what's such a cool feeling is he was probably 0-2 all the time and he could just throw anything there. He wasn't trying to like throw a breaker that was going to bounce on the back of the plate. He was more like, I'm going to throw a slider back door or that front hip. Like, I want to throw a strike. I think at 0-2, he's saying like, I'm going to throw a strike. I bet in 0-2, I throw a strike like 15% of the time.
Yeah, but I mean, think about what he could do. He could go ball, strike the ball, you know, whatever he wanted with any pitch and make it a competitive pitch. And, you know, I think that's why he was so good.
Okay, so he threw a no-hitter in his first postseason outing ever. In that same season, earlier in that year, he had thrown a perfect game. So what's cooler, a perfect game or a postseason no-hitter?
That's such a tough question because, you know, both of them are awesome. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, you got to take the no-hitter in the postseason.
Yeah.
You know, those come few and far in between. I mean, I don't know how many postseason no-hitters there have been, but there can't be that many. And especially
there's only been 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's only been 2.
So, I mean, that just shows how rare they really are. And to, you know, to do it in the postseason, man, geez. I mean, that's got to be one of the best feelings ever.
Yeah. Just to be in the perfect game, I went and watched every out. So I didn't watch every pitch, but every out of that perfect game, I watched it. He was just totally in command, dude. I mean, it didn't even have one of those plays where someone like had to dive and like save the outing. Like, he just ran through 27 dudes. It was incredible to watch. And then the postseason no hitter, the last play is actually really cool. So the catcher, it's like a swinging bunt and the bat ends up right in front of home plate, like where the ball is. And the catcher slides on his knees, has to like avoid the bat, picks up the ball and throws it from his knees. And to get the guy out to steal a postseason no-hitter. It was also only a 1-0 game. So I'm with you. I think you got to take the postseason no-hitter. I mean, that's incredible. It's his first postseason outing ever. Have you pitched in the postseason? You haven't pitched in the postseason yet?
No, I have not.
You got a postseason no-hitter coming your way.
I hope so, man.
No doubt. I touched on it earlier. We didn't want to totally get into it a lot in this podcast, but you said that he's, you know, he was your favorite pitcher growing up. So is it one of those things? Somewhat recently, I think we all probably remember where we were when we found out Kobe Bryant died. Do you remember where you were when you read or found out that Roy Halladay had passed away?
I was at home and I had just been talking to my uncle. So, short story is the only baseball jersey that I have ever owned that wasn't mine is Roy Halladay. And my uncle gave it to me for Christmas, I think when I was maybe 10 or 11 years old. And I was talking to him about, hey, man, like it's still the only baseball jersey that I've ever had. You know, thank you so much for getting that. It was like a throwback Phillies jersey too. And, literally like, I think a week later he had passed away. And like, I remember being like actually shaken up. Like you see like athletes pass away or famous people pass away, and, you know, it's a really sad thing, but like, I was actually shook up when I, you know, saw it on Twitter or on the news, whatever it was, and called my uncle. I was like, hey man, like this is pretty crazy. You know, your childhood idol growing up passes away in a freak accident. And, you know, it was definitely a very dreary, gloomy day for me.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Really sad. You think that, obviously, I have no idea what was going on in his brain, but I just wish that he was so good. And I feel like that he could have been a good teacher. And I know that the game is a little bit moved on from what his strengths were when he pitched, but he was a wizard, man. I think that I wish that he could have gotten involved and helped guys like you and me and professional ball players get better, because I think that might have been able to fill a void that he might have had that, you know, he was really struggling with past retirement.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's, you know, from guys that I've spoken to that play with him, he was so good at what he did, but he was also a good teacher and a good teammate. And he was able to explain things really well, you know, kind of dumb things down, because he had to do that. Like when he went sent back down, he had to figure everything else out. You know, he obviously had a really good pitching coach helping him do it, and he kind of wanted to give back in that sense. I just really wish I would have been able to pick his brain and just see what he had to say. Like, just be a fly on the wall and just listen to him talk, not even really ask questions, see what he has to offer.
All right. We end every podcast with this question, and I feel like this one's about as obvious as any of the ones we've had, because he basically did pitch in modern baseball, but as I just touched on, the game, especially pitching, has changed in its philosophy a lot since Roy Halladay retired. But I'll let you go first. What do you think? Do you think he'd be good in 2021 baseball?
Absolutely. I mean, it without a doubt in my mind. You know, there's still plenty of pitchers in our game now that kind of pitch similar to him. You know, you look at Kyle Hendricks, you look at a Rue, guys that don't necessarily light up the radar gun, but they know how to pitch. And I think those are the guys that are more fun to watch. You know, you have your DeGroms that throw 100 miles an hour, and it's just like, wow, 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 every pitch. But when you have guys that can command the strike zone, strike the ball, ball to strike with all their pitches and constantly keep hitters off balance, because that's really all pitching is, keeping hitters off balance. But they're able to do it with all their pitches, and it's just, I absolutely 100% think he would still be super successful in today's game.
Yeah, I wrote this down. I had him. He's a better version of Ryan Hendricks, who's a really good major league starting pitcher. It's cool to watch his highlights because, you know, his last year was 2013, so he pitched against a lot of guys that are still in the big leagues. Like, a lot of them. You'll run through them. Like, when he's on the Phillies, and even in that no-hitter, you're like, dude, I pitched against some of these guys. This wasn't that long ago. So strikeouts are so important to the game now. Do you think that he would have chased more strikeouts, or do you think he would have kept emphasis on pitching deep into the game, even though that's not something we value as much as we did even 10 years ago when he was playing?
I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, I mean, I feel like he'd keep that same attack plan, you know, maybe try to chase a couple more strikeouts here and there, but, you know, do what you are successful at doing. You know, there's no point in trying to create something that, you know, yeah, it would be nice to strike out more guys, but heck, let's get deep in the game still, because you don't see many guys doing that on a consistent basis.
I think you'd strike more guys out just based on where hitters are and their approach. You know, it's kind of a little bit of all or nothing right now with hitters. You know, they're trying to slug, they're trying to hit the ball over the fence, and they don't get punished for strikeouts. So I think Halladay would naturally just strike more people out because more people would be trying to hit taters off of him.
The only argument I will say is that, you know, back when he was pitching, umpires would give a little bit more side to side. You know, the umpires now are so, you know, they're really so good at, you know, being pretty tight with the strike zone. It'd be interesting to see how that would change, you know, not getting those ball and a half off the plate. You know, he's probably still going to get it because he's Roy Halladay, but you know, you never know. So
yeah, the Roy Halladay buffer zone, where it's like, that ball technically didn't make it back on the plate, but it was so filthy, I'm going to punch this guy out anyways. Trent, that's all I got for you, man. This was Roy Halladay. I think my final note, and I feel like your final note would be just how good he really was and how I feel like little he's talked about. You know, we keep talking Greg Maddux, and I know I've already said this, but like, I think he deserves to be mentioned in the same light as Greg Maddux as far as changing speeds, manipulating the baseball, and keeping hitters off balance. Is that kind of your last thought too?
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. 100%.
Yeah. All right. Trent Thornton, Blue Jay pitcher, myself, Blue Jay pitcher, talking about one of the greatest Blue Jay pitchers ever, Roy Halladay. This is a lot of fun. Trent, thanks, dude.
Thanks for having me, Ross, man. That was a blast.